WISE Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the ExchangeWire MadTech Podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Sheedy, CRO at ExchangeWire. And this week, I'm joined by Matt Broughton, Research Lead ExchangeWire, and Kieran O'Kane, CSO and co-founder ExchangeWire. Hello, Matt. Hello, Kieran.
Hello.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
How are we doing?
I'm going to jump straight in. We've got some really juicy stories that I think are going to get the conversation heated, or definitely some passion going to be coming out. And the first one's from AdExchanger. It's the DOJ's witness list for the Google antitrust trial released. In case some listeners are unaware, the DOJ is suing Google for allegedly monopolizing the digital advertising market by controlling both sides of the ad stack. They have now published the witness list for the upcoming antitrust trial against Google. The witness list is extensive, ranging from publishers and platforms to academics and analysts. For some context, Google avoided the uncertainty of a jury trial, which the DOJ had been seeking, by cutting a $2.3 million check to the government last month to satisfy maximum possible damages allegedly suffered by US government agencies overcharged by Google for ad buys. Now, Kieran, how could this case play out for Google, do you think?
Okay, so this is a fairly significant event in for ad tech this year. Some would say probably bigger than Privacy Sandbox or cookie deprecation, because we could see a potential breakup of Google here. Now, like, this case that's brought by the DOJ has been bubbling for the better part of 2 years, like, in terms of, like, putting, like, bringing it to trial. As you said, Amory, it was initially going to be a trial by jury, but Google obviously paid the fee. I think it was the DOJ tied it to some sort of government payment that they argued that Google had. There's some sort of like law that enables a jury trial if there is a government involvement or some kind of like, I wouldn't say fraud, but some kind of involvement with government expenditure. And they settled that, and now it's a bench trial where the judge will make the final say in it. And as you said, the witness list is extensive. Former Google luminaries, ad tech luminaries, including Brian O'Kelly, publishers. It is pretty extensive. The basis of the trial is about obviously their monopolistic behaviors in ad tech, and you know, the market dominance, self-preferencing, which is a big thing within Google stack. And then some of the M&A they've done over the years. So, you know, they bought DoubleClick, which basically gave them complete control over display market. They bought AdMel. They bought, what was the name of that DSP they bought? Oh, I can't remember now. Escapes me. But it basically they've bought stuff to kind of like shut out competitors. And then there's like the sort of consumer angle, which is, you know, they argue that these practices are harming consumers, which leads to higher advertising costs because competition's being destroyed. Adam Heimlich, who is a vocal proponent on this trial and on all things Google, has done an excellent YouTube series about the trial and how, breaking it down, the specifics of it. He even had Brian O'Kelly on to talk about how, you know, Brian experienced the wrath of Google's monopolistic sort of might, and probably was resulted in a sale to AT&T. He maintains that he could have, AppNexus could have still been a very vibrant company and a public company had it not been for Google's absolute dominance in the space. So it's a fairly significant trial, and if it goes the wrong way for Google, we could see a forced divestiture of some of their assets. Now, let's just say that they're forced to spin off GAM, right? Which is the ad server used by 98% of publishers in the world. It would immediately break Google's stranglehold on sell-side monetization and would probably open up the ad server market to a lot of ad tech competitors.
Which would be great.
Which would be insanely amazing for everybody in the industry. Whether or not that happens is anybody's guess. There is some sort of rumor and conjecture that Google may cut a deal with the DOJ to save face, right? Because there's going to be a lot of, you know, discovery, I think, is a key part of this, where, you know, where information becomes public, emails become public, and that actually could surface some more problems for Google, right? If some of these emails are incriminating around other areas, like, would Google save face or, you know, try not to risk any greater breakup like over the likes of maybe Chrome or YouTube, which are pivotal to their business, and just jettison the GAM business, either spin it off as an independent business or shut it down. I mean, these are pretty wild predictions for me, but like, it's not beyond reason, right? That might happen, and I don't think the industry is paying enough attention to this trial. I think it's really significant. I think it's probably because Google's been through the mire before in terms of these cases, but this is actual court case. It's not a it's not a fine. It's a proper trial. Whether it's a jury or whether it's a judge, that doesn't matter. Like, if the DOJ put up a fairly convincing case, which I think they can, I mean, Google's going to argue that, oh, the industry is much more sort of vibrant. It isn't really. If you look at the sell side piece, Google still are the most dominant player in the space, which means they can do whatever they want. For instance, like, I'll give you an example, right? There's rumors going around that Google are about to launch a curation product, right? And it's barely got off the ground. And Google could literally own the whole market because they own GAM and they own AdX, right? I think this is the type of shit that needs to stop. Like, they just are able to sort of one up every bit of competition that comes into the space. So my gut tells me there's going to be a big, big event here, like really big. And it will change the entire landscape. And it's only 2 months away.
Yeah.
Well, 2 months. It's only like...
It's the 9th of September, right?
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks away. Like, I'd love to go. I mean, I've got ATS London to go to. I'd fly out and I'd live stream in front
we'll
of
have a live house. Stream like on one of the screens.
And I literally do daily updates. And what I would do is interview everybody who came to the court. Like,
that would be interesting. Matt, how would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I think I think it's going to be one of two in terms of how the case will actually play out. I think either they'll get away with the usual pocket change fine, and I mean, you know, getting out of a jury trial by paying 0.003% of the money it makes in just 3 months alone isn't necessarily a positive sign, or that meaningful action in terms of the breakup of its stack. Very, very encouraged by that witness list. Covers the entire breadth of the programmatic supply chain, including those executives, as Kieran said, who've been very, very vocal in the past about how Google's anti-competitive actions or alleged anti-competitive actions have harmed their businesses. Obviously, we'll know a lot more when that trial kicks off on September 9th, just ahead of ATS London. But for those who can't wait that long, should keep an eye out for August 19th, when Google and the DOJ will file their proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which will give a very clear picture of what their arguments and counter-arguments in court are likely to be. We'll be keeping an eye out on that date. And we'll definitely run something around that and keep everyone up to speed. In terms of how that, you know, potential breakup of its ad tech stack could affect the industry as a whole, obviously it would give just a breath of fresh air and fresh impetus to the industry as a whole, particularly within the open/non-authenticated web. And I think recent moves from Google suggest that it's at least contingency planning for a spin out of at least part of its ad tech stack. But also, I think in a way that could, even if it were to divest of that, it would still keep most of the slices of the pie. Obviously, it's hiding media buys within its black box of PMax, so likely forcing more inventory towards its own properties, YouTube search, Gmail, Maps, etc. It's moving privacy sandbox auctions to running within the Chrome browser itself, or a trusted execution environment, i.e. Google's cloud. Yes, you can also run it on Amazon's cloud, but who knows in terms of how big tech companies work with each other. There could be a similar deal as to what Google pays Apple to be the first search provider within Safari. And there's also the requirement that within these privacy sandbox auctions that Google acts as the top seller before non-Google auction bids are even submitted, and then Google finalizes the winning bid. It's like eBay running bidding on the auctions it hosts, checks third-party bids, and then decides who won. It doesn't really match what would happen in any other auction environment. And early testing results published by Criteo suggested Google was boosting its market share in terms of the publisher dollars from 23% to 83%, which is obviously a massive spike. Which is obviously concerning. And I hope that if Google were to divest of its ad tech, parts of its ad tech stack, that any action would kind of help to redress that balance.
Yeah, if you strip out GAM and AdX, then the issues with Chrome go away, right? It leads to all sorts of things. Cookie deprecation could happen tomorrow morning because of that. Like, you could literally, it would happen, right? Because Google would no longer have the monetization engine it has around publishers. To Matt's point.
But if you go back a step there, Kieran, what you were saying, like Google have said that they reckon the DOJ is doubling down on what they call a flawed argument that would slow innovation, that would raise advertising fees and make it harder for thousands of small businesses and publishers to grow.
I think the DOJ has got a really good case. What innovation has Google done in the last two decades? What have they done? Yeah. They bought DoubleClick, they bought AdMeld.
Yep.
They just buy companies. And then
what's a successful Google product that it hasn't bought? It only makes progress through inorganic acquisitions rather than
100%. There is no innovation at Google. When was the last ad tech innovation they've done? What have they done? Like they buy and they optimize. That's what they do, right? They have done nothing. I think that any business that has like 95% or 98% or whatever it is of the market is a monopoly. It needs to be broken up, right? The fact is that they can give the ad server away for free. That's probably not in the deal. The DOJ has been smart around this, right? They're not talking about Google's sort of pricing practices. But think about this way, right? You can use GAM for free up to a point, and then they make all their money through the black box AdX, right? That's how they make their cash on both ends. So I think this is like, I think there's calculations being done within Google going, is the open web really for us, right? Think about it this way, right? They will probably just put more demand into YouTube and their own apps through PMax. And they're going, right, the open web, forget about it. It's about YouTube, it's about cloud, it's about AI, right? That's where we make our calculations. I don't think there's any. They cleared out quite a lot of the old DoubleClick, guard out of there. Like, there's no real ad tech people. It's all Google people that run the show now. I don't know. I have a feeling this is going to go. It would be unbelievable for the industry if Google gave up. Well, forced to give up this asset or spin out this asset. Now, the next question you have to ask: what would that look like, right? So if Google say, well, we'll spin that in a separate business within Alphabet, that's unacceptable, right, to the DOJ, right? You're just basically like hiving it off in a separate entity. It's part of a big...
That's just slapping a new name badge on it.
If they spin it out as a separate business, then the valuation will be interesting because people are talking about 100 million or 200 billion based on the size of their business, which I think is 30 billion or whatever, right? So whatever multiple on top of that. So it could be 10 times, it could be whatever. But the problem with Google spun out as a separate, GAM and AdX spun out as a separate business, it's all dependent on Google's demand, right? Search demand drives the yield on AdX, right? That's where all of their demand comes. That's where all the power of Google. That's why they bought DoubleClick, because they were able to breathe life into it with all that search demand they have. What happens in that instance, right? If you disconnect that, then Garmin's just a shell, right? The tech is interesting, but is it any more interesting than Equative or more interesting than Index or Magnite or whatever, you know, great ad tech, independent ad tech company there is? No, I don't think so. So I would have loved, I just love to be in those meetings, I trying to work out what their next move, because the case could go against them, hey, you know? I don't think, how can Google argue that that the market is flourishing when it's not, right? They own such a big chunk of it and have such control. And the evidence is damning in many ways. The email exchange, the business with Facebook, you know, the stuff that we're doing around header bidding, trying to kill it off. This new stuff around Privacy Sandbox is definitely going to make an appearance in the trial, as per Matt's point.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is the most fascinating thing this year in ad tech. Forget about all the other shit that we're talking about. This is the event of the year.
So watch this space.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have to move on to the next story, because I know we could talk about that in a lot more detail, but let's revisit it, as Matt said, on the 19th of August.
19th of August is that date when they're doing the filings.
All right, well, the next story that I'd like us to discuss is from the FT, and it's about Axel Springer and KKR in talks to break up media empire. So this story is relating to the talks between Axel Springer CEO Matthias Döpfner and private equity group KKR about potentially breaking up the media conglomerate could lead to significant changes within the company. The proposed separation would see Döpfner and Frieda Springer, who's the widow of the company's founder, gaining greater control over Axel Springer's media properties. These include well-known publications such as Politico, Business Insider and Bild. The deal would separate the group's media assets from its digital classified operations, and it is believed that one of the key motivations behind this potential split is to enable KKR to exit its investment in Axel Springer, which began in 2019 when KKR became the largest shareholder with, I think it was a 35.6% stake. Now, Matt, what do you think are the implications of this move, in particular on the monetization of news-based media?
I think it's quite a unique or at least business-specific situation, with Döpfner reportedly pushing for a further foothold in the US news market, so could be looking for an acquisition beyond Politico. The FT article itself suggests Wall Street Journal. However, pretty much every one of the top 10 newspapers in the US, they've either undergone some kind of layoffs, or, say, the Washington Post, for example, they've known to be having a few, you know, editorial bits of turmoil. So they could all be on the potential shopping list for that acquisition. And KKR swooping in to offer in that cash to do so while winning that increasingly profitable classifieds business seems a bit of a win-win for both in that regard.
Yeah.
And yeah, it doesn't necessarily screen too positively about the health of Politico, Bild and Business Insider. They're being streamlined. There were layoffs at Bild and Business Insider earlier in the year, and the fact they're also left out of those acquisition talks. However, to me, I think in the age of retail media and the power of logged-in user data, I think there's been some missed opportunities in terms of cross-pollination between that classifieds business and the publisher side of Axel Springer. For example, I let the Politico site run for a while yesterday, did a few refreshes, etc. A unit from LinkedIn Jobs was by far the most regular occurring unit. Surely an in-house unit from Axel Springer-owned Stepstone Group, which is a recruitment platform, would make more sense there. And similarly, editorially, Business Insider launching a section on property, that makes reasonable sense. You'd get, you know, open up advertising opportunities for likes of property management companies, estate agents, etc. But more importantly, Axel Springer's own property platform Aviv, rather than pumping out generic articles along the lines of Dick Van Dyke says his secret to living a long life is going to the gym three times a week. There's just missed opportunities there, which I think they could make, especially when people are obviously transitioning more towards that logged in authenticated web, and also retail media being the big buzz topic of the industry. It seems that there's just been so many missed opportunities to actually make both sides of the business work closer together.
It's interesting that you mentioned StepStone, because I think I read on Yahoo Finance that they were saying that the breakup could facilitate the listing of StepStone, which is the online job portal owned by them, and that it had been paused because of, you know, the war in Ukraine and challenging marketing conditions. And they were saying that this kind of could be a strategic move, would likely enhance the growth prospects of Axel Springer's digital and international ambitions, be that if it is the US as a priority market. Potentially it could make them a little bit more agile and focus on particular, maybe, you know, specific market segments. I'm not sure. But Ciarán, what do you think, you know, how could a breakup affect other players in the landscape?
I mean, you can understand why private equity wants to take out the listings job site, because they make money, right? They're recurring revenue. They're boring cash-generating businesses, which is what private equity love, right? Whereas then the media business is a sparkly sort of, I would say, like, dangerous sort of business as well. I mean, I think Business Insider got itself wrapped up in some spat with a hedge fund manager. What I can't remember his name. They made some accusation about his wife
plagiarizing her dissertation, wasn't it?
Dissertation, and then he went to war with Business Insider. Like, the last thing a private equity company wants is that kind of heat. Like, so they're probably thinking, like, media is interesting, but it's not as interesting as a lot of, like, recurring cash from these assets. So, and then obviously, you know, the owners probably think that having a private equity partner is sort of a drag on potentially M&A activity. Like, so would they sanction sort of acquiring the DOJ, or sorry, the Wall Street Journal, DOJ, but DOJ when the acquiring the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post, which I believe Bezos is looking to sell, you know, they may be a handbrake on that. So that this is sort of like probably conversations like, we've got these potential acquisitions and we can't do it because you say no. And I think the Canadian pension fund is involved as well. So hiving off those assets make a ton of sense. I agree with Matt to a point about cross-pollination, but like, maybe that's deliberate. Maybe they didn't want to sort of like cannibalize any sort of revenue that these sites get, especially if you're looking at a potential IPO. So this makes a lot of sense to me. You know, media business versus sort of like utility publishing business.
But do you think, is there a particular opportunity in the US, you know, from what I've read, and I haven't read loads, but they're looking at the US rather than in Germany, for example.
I think Axel Springer tried to buy the FT, where the Axel Springer tried to buy Telegraph. So they're trying to buy solid media assets. They're two really, really good assets. So Telegraph is a very profitable business, as is the FT. FT obviously got bought by Nikkei. I don't know what's happening with the Telegraph. I think someone who's buying it, but they would be two very good assets. And the Wall Street Journal is a really, really solid asset. Like, you know what I mean? It's a go-to for everybody in the world in terms of financial news. And, you know, that and the FT, the Wall Street Journal and the FT are the two sort of like standard bearers for financial journalism in the world. Yeah, I think they'd probably look to get more of those assets, particularly because they're in the media world, they're good assets because they've got, you know, subscription base, high end advertising.
Exactly. Locked in.
You're not buying some pikey local sort of news type thing, like, you know.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. Thank you both. I'm going to move us on to the third story, because it's 3 and 4. We're going to mash up two stories together. One's from the European Commission, and it's about. The Commission sends preliminary findings to X for breach of the Digital Service Act. And the second one is Microsoft-owned ad tech Xandr accused of EU privacy breaches. And that's a story from TechCrunch. So firstly, the European Commission has informed X that several of its features are in breach of the Digital Service Act, including its checkmark account verification feature and its advertising transparency. With regards to Microsoft and Xandr, Xandr's been accused of EU privacy breaches in a complaint by an unnamed individual in Italy. This complaint has been backed by...
Giovanni.
I'm glad it said Italy as opposed to Ireland, because I, you know, yeah. Wouldn't second guess who that could be. Oh, there we go. Backed by European privacy advocacy group NOIB, or NOIB, spelled N-O-Y-B, and for those like myself, perhaps, who didn't know about it, it's a non-profit organisation aiming to close the gap between privacy laws and the reality of corporate practice. And also involved in this is Italy's Data Protection Authority. So it accuses Xandr of inadequate transparency and breach of data access rights for people in the region whose information is processed for targeted advertising. Right, I hope all that made sense. So merging them both together, I'm keen to get your thoughts. And Matt, I'm going to come to you first on this. What do these cases tell us about the kind of state of the EU's privacy landscape right now?
Oh, on the first one, it certainly suggests that regulators are moving significantly faster on the Digital Markets Act, Digital Service Acts, compared to GDPR, with Apple, Google, Meta and now X all facing those non-compliance investigations. And that counters one of the main criticisms of GDPR, which started the week like England in the Euros final, a bit muddled and sluggish to get going. Another criticism of GDPR is that it unduly affected the small businesses in comparison to the big tech giants, and this looks to be redressing that balance. However, obviously far fewer firms fall under the banner of gatekeeper status under the DMA, DSA, unlike GDPR, which affects everyone from Google to an old deer putting a Ring camera out facing the street. The Xandr case looks a bit more of an old-fashioned wrangling over exact legislative text relating to privacy, which is obviously sweet, sweet nectar to those privacy professionals. The fact that not a single access request was granted in over the course of a year is not necessarily a great look. No. The guidelines issued on those deletion requests do seem to support Noib's case in that the individual did everything that was required of him under GDPR, including sending Xandr the cookie they'd set on his device, even if data was purely anonymized, as Xandr suggests in their defense. They should be able to delete data relating to that browser or relating to that device, at the very minimum, as it is, you know, surely unique to them. Nor is the wide array of segments the user was placed into, which is another thing that Noib details in their case, that doesn't suggest a resounding success for personalized advertising. But the complaint also details the fact that the browsing activity took place over the course of less than 2 hours on just 7 websites. If it took 7 clicks for cookie-based targeting to determine user gender, age, salary, state of employment, and television viewing habits, then I think everyone, privacy experts included, every single consumer should be a little bit more worried than the industry as it is.
Kieran, what do you have to add to that?
I mean, like, I'm not going to talk about X because this is just a sort of boring trash can, basically. This price is being pulled up, and it is absolutely an abomination of a website. Like, and probably the DSA the EU has a pretty strong case on the Xandr stuff. Like, I think that a lot of the ad tech business I see are not taking privacy and compliance as serious as it should, and I'm not. I mean, this could possibly become a fine for Xandr and a bit of a black eye for them, right? The fact that they didn't reply to any of the requests for information is silly, to be frank. Like, that would be standard for a data privacy officer to sort of undertake. But I do think that there's this is a good slap in the wrist and a wake up call to the rest of ad tech to get their act together regarding this. Take this stuff seriously, because there are fines, there is consequences for not doing it properly. like the bad PR they're going to get off the back of this, right? The fact that we're talking about this, the fact that everybody's talking about it, the fact they're in TechCrunch, which will probably become a story in the FT and the Wall Street Journal. So that you're now talking about some unnecessary blowback for Xandr and its parent company, Microsoft, which then damages the brand and, you know, all of the above, right? There is a business consequence and there is a legal consequence. I mean, they could get a fairly significant fine. And these guys are not like, this is not a half-arse operation. This is a fairly surgical analysis of how Xandr sort of breached the GDPR regulation, right?
Yeah.
And the evidence is pretty damning if it's kosher. And that's up to the regulator then to kind of figure out what they do next, investigate and fine. But there'll be more of these cases. This one, these guys, like, I don't need to emphasize this fact because I've been saying it for years. These guys are running around the place doing these tests. These are like these are not charities. They are like charities, right? Their modus operandi or their raison d'etre is to expose bad behavior in privacy, right? And they will, ad tech is an easy target. So I don't understand why these companies are not buttoned up the way they should be. And they should be taking this stuff really seriously. Like, they're not. Clearly, they're not. Like, if you have someone who's actually asked for a request for information, they should at least respond to the email. You know what I mean? Should be a priority.
That's what Noib were saying, that they don't comply with a single access request. In fact, that despite collecting vast amounts of detailed information about people, Xandr reported an astonishing 0% response rate to access and erasure requests in 2022. And going back to your point about, you know, from a business perspective and a potential fine, they reckon that the authority should impose a fine of up to 4% of Xandr's parent company, so Microsoft, 4%, and Microsoft's full year revenue for 2023 was around $212 billion. So that's
like
what, 8.5 billion.
For the sake of just hiring people to do that, why wouldn't you even, like, it would be just a draw? Like I don't think these companies realize that they are so exposed to this stuff like that. Like your point, Amory, like they. Like, that could be, we're talking what, 4%?
8.5 billion.
I mean, Jesus,
that's not pocket change.
No, that's the Christmas bonus done, hey. you know, or like, buybacks for investors. I mean, look, I don't know. I've no idea what happens next, but I suspect that the EU will do an investigation. And Giovanni is one man on an island in Sicily, and there's 420 million people living in Europe. Do you think this is going to be the last case they're going to bring against ad tech companies? No.
Oh, God, no. Absolutely not.
So the lesson here is to be buttoned up privacy-wise. Like, take it seriously. I know it's boring. I know it's so boring for people, right? It's just not sexier than talking about LinkedIn's feckin' AI optimization. But it is so important. There is, you know, there is a law in place. There are fines being levied against companies who do not comply with GDPR regulations or privacy regulations in Europe, right? And similar rules apply here in the UK as well. So, like, it's not just an isolated case. Companies need to get wiser about this, smarter about this, and get the right technology in there, right, to kind of, like, make sure that they're buttoned up privacy and compliance with. I just don't understand. It's just remarkable. People talk about sustainability, right? As if it's the last, you know, the most important. And it is, don't get me wrong. But privacy just seems to slip down people's hit list or checklist. And you're sitting there going, but you can be fined $8 billion, Microsoft. Why would you not hire a team or even one person to answer the email from this lad in Sicily?
Jeez, you wouldn't want to be that one person, though, would you?
You wouldn't be the most popular person.
No, you wouldn't. On that note, actually, I'd like to say, you know, if there is anyone from Google or Axel Springer or Xandr that disagree with what we're saying, please feel free, you know, drop your answers on a postcard. We'd love to chat to you. But we're out of time this week. So thank you, Matt. Thank you, Ciarán. That is this week's Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you, listeners.